Welcome to That One Record. I'm Kyle Cresce. This is episode 6, where we sit down with Sam Sutherland of the band Junior Battles to talk about 2011's Idle Ages. Junior Battles is a pop-punk band from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, very close to where I live currently. As we talk about in the episode, I have filled in on drums a couple times for the band. I've known these guys a long time, and from getting to know them personally, being around when this record came out, being around for the things that happened afterwards, I really thought they would make a fun episode. If you haven't heard of Junior Battles, I urge you not to stop this episode. Give it a shot. Listen all the way through. I picked them very specifically. This is a band that everything they do with so much joy and enthusiasm. I think making a record is very, very different when you are an established artist with maybe one or two great records already in the bag, squeezing in another one in between touring cycles, or maybe it's your major label debut or a debut on it. There's so many other factors that when you are a career band in the midst of a hot career, trying to do a record, as the Menzingers were, as Tim Casher was, as Drug Church was in these previous episodes, it's so very different than what Junior Battles does. What I wanted to really showcase here was that creating art with your friends and the people you love can be just as fulfilling and important as some of these other bigger records that are out there. I don't think you even need to have had to heard this record to appreciate this episode and appreciate where Sam is coming from with a lot of this stuff. It's packed full of dreams with ambition, but at the end of the day, it all kind of rests and comes back on the relationship these four guys have together and how that relationship not only informs how they record and make a record, but how other people receive it and who it affects around them and the inspiration they can be even when they're not a full-time band. Sam specifically is a true creative inspiration for me. He's a guy that always has something on the go, whether it's this Junior Battles recordings or he has an internet show called This Exists. You can find it on YouTube. Just Google it. It's some of the wildest stuff you've ever seen. He had a recording company called Juicebox Recording Co. before that I released some music through. And you may be most familiar with him through the used-to-be Blink-155 podcast. Now it's just called the 155 podcast. Hilarious guy. Tons of fun to be around. Glad I know him. Glad he took the time to sit down and talk to me about this. This is 2011's Idle Ages with Sam Sutherland from the band Junior Battles. Okay, so I'm here with Sam from Junior Battles to talk about 2011's Idle Ages. Sam, do you want to talk about what you do in the band?
First of all, I love that you've launched this podcast and you so quickly have run out of marquee guests that you're like inside of year one having to talk about Junior Battles. So I'm sorry to hear that things are not going well for your podcast.
This is my podcast.
Yeah. Right? I probably should. I mean, I'm trying to show you respect by disrespecting myself. That's all. It's convoluted. I play guitar and I sing in Junior Battles.
And so you are one of two songwriters, Zorgel being the other.
Yeah, Aaron Zorgel, who also plays guitar and also sings.
Also plays guitar and sing. And so we're talking about 2011's Idle Ages.
Oh, shit. You got the vinyl.
I have four copies of the vinyl.
Wow. How many different colorways there are?
I think there's five. I'm missing one, according to Discogs.
You're a real fan, Kyle. That's the only reason I agreed to do this. Like, you know, we've had such a tough time in the press, but I was like, Kyle understands.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit, man.
Now that Joel's been canceled.
Yeah. Joel's definitely been. Joel did Gabe. You know, Books of Bovines and Winslow and stuff. He did his Christian podcast. To talk about like growing up, because there's so many, they walk amongst us, right? These Christian pop punkers. And so Gabe has a podcast just about interviewing, you know, I think he had Andrew from Comeback Kid and stuff on there, talking to just sort of people who, I guess, come from that community. But because Joel did that podcast as a member of Junior Battles, he has been canceled, at least by us.
It's over, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you remember when you guys started writing the record? Would it have been the year before, 2010?
Yeah, I feel like we might have been writing some of this in like 2019, because this was like in a period of time where we were all kind of underemployed and very focused on creative pursuits. And by that, I mean like drinking 8 nights a week, but we were practicing all the time. And we took this all kind of so seriously. So if I had to guess, I would say some of this probably is 2019,
2009.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. We were writing it in the future. We brought it back to the past, which we were trying to do like a sort of Marvin Berry type, pull a Marvin Berry type ruse. It did not work. We did not create the music of the future, unfortunately. But yeah, this definitely would be 2019 for sure. 2009. Sorry, man. I'm going to just keep saying it. I'm in a rut now.
And so you're gearing up to do this record. At what point because it seemed like the label came in and kind of blew up so quick. When does Paper and Plastic come on board?
So we played Fest for the first time as a band. Maybe it was the second time. It was one of our first Fests, and we were driving out the morning, like on Monday, because we had to like get pretty far that first day. So we were just like that sort of end of Fest, unspeakably fucking hungover. And our you know, Fest experience was always just, I mean, as with anyone's, I think, especially at that time, like so kind of incredible and buoying, because you go down there and you're like, everyone fucking loves my band. Shit is awesome. Yeah. I think we like had some pretty good shows on the way down. And one of the things we were talking about was, you know, we had done, you know, an EP, we'd done a 7-inch, and we knew we wanted to do a full length, but we really like wanted it to kind of get a fair look. Like we thought we had some good songs and we were kind of excited about what we were doing. And we wanted to like put in as much time touring as possible. And so we were kind of like, in our fantasies, like which label would be sort of maybe into it and what would be kind of the right fit. And Vinny had just started doing Paper and Plastic stuff. And we were talking, you know, all together, like one or two nights, like, oh, I feel like Paper and Plastic would be like the perfect fucking thing. Like, and I feel like we can make it happen. And like, they've got bands that kind of sound like us. And it just kind of seemed possible, but like the best case scenario, you know, which like we fantasized about a lot. And literally every other time we've done this like wish casting thing, it hasn't worked out. But we were leaving the sort of McDonald's parking lot behind the Holiday Inn in Gainesville at like at 6 a.m. on Monday morning after Fest. And I was still connected to the hotel Wi-Fi, I guess, on my BlackBerry, and was like loading up internet, because that's the sort of shit you had to do back then before we had roaming. And I had a MySpace message to the band account from Vinny that was like, hey, you know, I missed your guys' set this weekend, but like, I've heard some good things about your band, you know, from some of our kind of mutual friends. Like, if you guys have some demos, you should send them over to me. And it was like the most triumphant sort of punctuation mark on that weekend. Like, it was like a real like punching the ceiling of the van. Like, we had just sort of willed this MySpace message into existence from like the exact person that we hoped would kind of notice what we were doing. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah. So you didn't know Vinny at all really before this, or had any relation with Paper and Plastic? It was a total just wish list label.
We met Vinny in person for the first time, I think, on the second Junior Battles record. Like, we never met Vinny. I talked to him on the phone a couple of times, but it was one of those things where I don't remember who, and I actually don't know if I've ever figured out who exactly kind of like put it in his ear, but you know, he was friends with a lot of the bands that we were friends with, and we were like playing a lot, and we were being really, really aggressive about like touring and trying to bring bands up to Toronto and like helping bands get across the border, like what you would call cynically now, like networking, or I guess at the time was just like being a good punk. I don't know. But somehow we sort of came like into his purview, you know, because at that time Paper and Plastic was doing a lot of stuff with a lot of bands in that scene that were kind of like a, you know, some of them were more popular than us, but like in that kind of specific area, those ones are doing like, you know, Make Do and Mend and some of those other like great records from that era of Paper and Plastic. But yeah, we didn't, it wasn't like an existing relationship at all.
So Vinny reaches out, asks for demos. Do you remember, did you have demos at the time? Did you have songs already in the bag for a record? Or was that the push to, okay, it's full length time?
Yeah, I think that was like the push to like, now we got to go and get those things together. Because, you know, we had been working on stuff again. We were probably practicing like a few days a week. We had, for a while we were practicing in the basement of my old house on Clinton in Toronto, where we also were filming this TV show called Talk Show Night at Juicebox Manor, which was like our version of Wayne's World, where we'd have Wilhelm Scream or Thermals or whatever play in our basement and make our neighbors hate the living shit out of us. And so we were practicing there for a little bit, but then Justin Taylor, who plays bass in the band, he was living in a literal closet in a full house over on Delaware, you know, just like a few streets over, also in Toronto. And so they had like a fully kitted out basement with like blankets and stuff on the walls. It's where that band, the Darcys, all used to live. And so they had like a pretty decent kind of practice setup in the basement. What actually happened there, fucking rules, is that the Darcys went on tour and the guys that were living there, which were also our friends, kind of just like rented out the other rooms and were like, you guys don't live here anymore. And so the Darcys just didn't have a place to live in Toronto anymore. And we had this great practice space, which ruled. They've done just fine. I feel like many of our tax dollars have gone to paying back the Darcys for the practice space that we stole from them. So I feel pretty good about that. But we definitely had stuff, but we didn't really substantially like demo this record until that next summer. Because that would, I guess, you know, Fest would have been the fall, and then we went up and we did a lot of demos for this record up at Aaron Zorgel's parents' place in Holstein, Ontario. And those would have been the demos that we would have sent to Vinny to, like, convince him that we were sick and worth, you know, giving Steve Risen a few dollars to record.
Did every song from those demoings make the record? Do you remember what batch you had?
Yeah, we're, like, pretty do we not believe in the sunk cost fallacy, or we're like constantly getting got by the sunk cost fallacy? Generally, if we have spent, because especially in this era, like, you know, I think about some of the parts on this record and we would just loop like 8 bars of a song for, I mean, literally an hour, I want to say, like, without exaggerating, where it was like trying to work out like some, like songs like 25 or like Birthday Parties, where I know that we were just like struggling to lock something in or find something, and we would just loop it and loop it and loop it, because Justin's housemates in that place on Delaware, like, it would make them insane. Like, they were like, I don't know how you guys do it. And we're like, well, we're playing. But for them, they're just in a house that just has 8 bars of pop punk, like, looping endlessly and endlessly. And so I think, like, we generally, because that was the process, we're always able to, like, in the end, find a thing that we liked in something. So on this record, I think there are literally no songs that were demoed that did not make the record. There's one Junior Battles demo, I think from when we were doing Rally, that didn't make the record, and that's literally it. But I think that also has to do with a fairly substantial amount of kind of self-selection that happened before we would start demoing. So I think of something like 17, which opens the record, was 2 separate demos that I was working on my own and brought to the band a few times, and they just like weren't working. So it wasn't like one of those things where like I would bring an idea or Aaron would bring an idea and we would just go at it. You know, like, I remember playing the initial version of 17 for everyone, which I thought was fucking awesome, but it was like half the speed of the one that's on the record and without the sort of intro. So it was just, it basically sounded like a Kings of Leon song. It was just like, whoa, like, in the back of a car, parked in your, like, it was very fucking mid-tempo. And everyone was like, this is good, but like, this sounds like a Kings of Leon song. And so I just went back and re-demoed it, like with a punk beat under it. And we were like, oh, that's it. You know? So I think because like we are sort of fairly brutal before we get to the point where we were all like really invested in playing a song. There's nothing that got cut at all.
And so you have two songwriters, two singers. Are you writing separately, or is everything kind of like that, where you bring in an idea forth, let's all hash it out together, and then we'll figure out who's singing what? Or do one of you come in with full kind of finished songs, or is it always a group effort?
It's very genuinely kind of different every single time. So like 17, as an example, I kind of demoed, and I do really, really rudimentary demos because I'm not a very good musician. So when I demo a song, it'll be like a verse and a chorus, and then maybe I'll loop those just for the sake of pretending that it feels like a real song. And that'll generally be it. And like, I can't play like real guitar, and I can't play bass. And generally I'm programming drums, like the most like kind of like rudimentary fashion possible. Aaron tends to do way more, like he can only hear it if it's like fully, fully developed. So, you know, a song like 25, I had the kind of like whoa, whoa part in the verse. And then the intro was like some other part that we put together. But then I think we all wrote the bridge, you know, together. Whereas 25, as I recall, was very much like a pretty much completed Aaron demo that then we like kind of learned and then changed and spent like hours and hours and hours like fucking around with. Whereas like, I'm just sort of thinking through the record in my mind, Nostalgic at 23 is like a full on written from scratch as a band. Like, you know, Aaron was like playing around with some riff. Aaron and Justin and Joel are like spectacularly talented actual musicians. And then I'm just like, I'm going to play an octave chord over it. Maybe that'll be fine. And so that song comes together like literally through jamming. And then we'd like record, you know, an instrumental version of it by like putting, you know, a phone under your jacket. And then usually like Aaron and I would just like both take it home and we'd both like write stuff over it and then kind of send it back and forth and, you know, realize what we liked about what the other one was doing. Like, oh, I think I wrote a more interesting verse, but he wrote a better chorus. And then we'd like divide it up and then sometimes like write lyrics and stuff together. You know, same with like a song like Living in the Future of Feelings. That was, you know, we had demoed most of the record and we realized that we didn't have like anything that was like a fun pop punk song. Like they were all kind of, it felt very dirgy and like complicated. And so we're like, we just want to write a song. It's like, yeah, it's a pop punk song. We're having fun at the fest kind of vibe. And so that was one where, you know, we wrote that instrumentally and then Aaron and I wrote all those lyrics together like in the studio while Justin was tracking bass. So it like just completely kind of changes from song to song. But I think the crucial part always being that like, even if it is wholly complete, there was always like a huge amount of involvement, you know, from Justin and Joel. Like it was never just sort of anything being kind of handed down, like, oh, we're the songwriters or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you do these demos. You'd already worked with Steve Risen at Drive Studios before this?
We did the very first Junior Battles thing, the EP that we did for Black Pint, Hotel Bibles. We recorded with Donnie Cooper and we did it at the studios on top of Sonic Onion in Hamilton because we just like wanted to try to do something different. And so that actually is, so we did one thing with Donnie Cooper, which was awesome. But yeah, we did the 7-inch with Steve, and we've done everything else, you know, with him since.
Yeah, Steve, if you listen to the Flatliners episode, it's the same guy who did pretty much almost all of the Flatliners stuff.
Yeah, they did like, I mean, they did so much until they started doing stuff with like Peter and like Peter Van Helfort the other guy now, whose name I can't remember.
And now, are you a studio person? Some people love being in the studio, kind of knocking out what they hear in their head, or are you don't enjoy your studio time?
You know, like, I think the truth is that it's probably like somewhere in the middle. I love playback, you know, because I love listening to myself. It might come as a shock, you know, a few different avenues in which I am able to listen to myself. And that's like basically the extent of my creative interests and pursuits. But I love being in a room with people that you've tried to make something with and just like sitting there and adding stuff and fucking with things. And especially with someone like Steve, who I think is such a like tremendously talented and like unbelievably underrated producer and engineer, like to watch him kind of come up with an idea and tweak something. And that experience is like one that I genuinely cherish and that I love, but I'm also like, I'm not joking. Like I'm not good at playing guitar. I mean, like you and I have played together, so you may have picked this up. Like I'm really fucking bad. And so the process for me of tracking sometimes is arduous. And I hate sitting around while like you get drum sounds or whatever. Like that just fucking kills me. But I would say more often than not, it's just like, you're just sitting around like talking shit and drinking coffee. Like it fucking rules, you know?
Do you remember what expectations you guys had for yourself when you went in to record this album? You had Paper and Plastic on board. You were working with someone you were comfortable with. Was this like basically trying to determine where you are in your life? Is this like, hey, this is going to be a shot? We got a little window here with Ages and not committed to, you know, full-time legit careers or whatever at this point. I don't believe. I think you were all kind of a little bit transient at that point.
Big time. Yeah.
So was this like, hey, we're going to at least go real hard while we have this chance and then see what happens after?
Yeah. Like that was, I mean, that was 100% it. You know, we had bought a van as you do, you know, we had a great practice situation. I felt like we had lined up a lot of stuff that set us up. If people were going to hear this music, like we were going to kind of get a shot with the people who would potentially like the band. You know, I loved like those songs. And I feel like we, as we were making it and as it was coming together and as things like, even just like the title, which I think is fucking great. And I can say that cause it wasn't my idea. You know, as all these elements kind of started, you know, folding in the artwork that we got Greg Pepper to do, like it felt like we had a really, really coherent sense of what we wanted it to be. And we had worked really, really hard on it. And it seemed like there were people around us, like, and people in bands around us where like it was working. You know, what's so funny is like, I mean, I've spent like literally 2 hours a day podcasting, but I spent so little time talking about Junior Battles to people that I feel like I'm doing a terrible job of it. It's just like very strange to me.
No, first of all, we're going back a decade. So it's always going to be tough to recall any of that. But this is specifically why I wanted to talk to you about this. You joke that I maybe just ran out of guests, but want to try and get a spectrum of releases, because I think there is all these diamonds in the rough where maybe these bands didn't tour or they're still not playing now, but there's the creative approach kind of changes when there's different expectations, both self-inflicted expectations or, you know, external ones. Like, you know, Tim Casher has a much different mindset going to the studio than you guys would. It would be very different, and I think that creates different results. Like with this record specifically, would you call this a concept record?
For sure. Yeah. When that was very like, and once we realized we kind of had that, and it wasn't something that we set out to do. You know, we weren't like, it's going to be about Ages, because again, something like the title kind of came in later, but that puts kind of a nice, you know, bow on it. But for us, it was very much, you know, we probably had, you know, 6 of the songs kind of like roughly done. And at that point, what we did was like try to take a look and say, like, what connects these things? Like, what connects these songs musically? What connects these songs, you know, not just literally lyrically, but like thematically? Like, what are the things, especially if Aaron and I are kind of occasionally writing in isolation, you're like, okay, what are you actually saying here? And it's a lot of that. It's like a lot of those conversations of like, you know, I think Aaron tends to write a little more literally and I tend to write a little more abstractly. And so there is these sort of conversations sometimes. And again, it's where a song like Nostalgica 23, I think, is interesting because it melds those things. Like, I think it has this like very direct lyrical approach that he has, but there's some more like sort of stuff that is, you know, not as immediately parsable that I feel like I sort of jammed in there. And so, you know, when you talk about, okay, like, what are you trying to say and why are you saying that? And you get into those conversations that then informs like how you kind of fill in the blanks. So at that point you kind of realize like where you have certain pieces, and then we go, okay, well, you know, musically we want a song that'll kind of do this. And then thematically, how do we connect it to what's already there and kind of strengthen that? And then, like I said, something like the title, which came out of like, you know, months and months and months of sort of batting around ideas, you know, that we ultimately felt like created that framing device that made it feel in a very kind of loose sense like a concept record. But, you know, to go back to your question, because I think it's an interesting one, and maybe the one that like hits the closest to home for me, is like, I wanted to be in a band. Like, I wanted to be in a band my whole fucking life, not just like in a band. Like, I wanted to be in a band as a job. And I had been in bands. The band before Junior Battles, we took like pretty seriously. Like, that was a bunch of guys I went to college with, where we had all been in high school bands and stuff that we really liked. And we were like, okay, well, we're a little older now, we're about to graduate from school. And it's that same thing of like, we're at the right age. Like, we bought a trailer, we pressed a bunch of copies of the CD. Like, we, you know, we did that one. Like, that was actually fully properly independent. We did that ourselves. And like, I was trying to find an email recently from like years and years ago, and I found like me sending it out to like every college radio music director. Like, we were full, because this was long enough ago, but like, that was the playbook we were following, where I was like mailing out shit to every fucking college station in the country and then following up. And like, we were like really making an effort, because we were looking at bands that felt like they were, you know, never, not quite our peers, but we were only a few years behind bands like Alexis and Menin. And you like looked at them and you were like, it feels attainable, right? And they were great fucking bands, and you're like, I think we're a good band, maybe that's enough, you know. And so the irony is with Junior Battles, like, Junior Battles was like literally started as a response to that attitude, where from the minute that we started that band, we're like, how do we, like, we want to be a good band, we're like trying to make money or whatever, but we were like, how do we turn this into Menin? Like, how do we, like, what is the way that you get from here to Menin? And with this band, it was like, that's fucking stupid. Like, we just want to like hang out and be friends and like get drink tickets at shows. But by the time we got to this record, it was like, oh, I actually think this band is really good, and we really love playing with each other, and we love touring, and we love this sort of scene that we're a part of, and like, I would like to do this more. And there was a very clear sense on our end of like, maybe people are going to really like this record. Like, people had liked the EP, but really, really liked the 7-inch that we did with Dan and with Square Up. And it just sort of felt like, like, we'd had, you know, the song Basements on that 7-inch that like felt like it was a thing that happened when we would play live. And I was like, oh my God, I've never had that experience. Like, is a, you know, a fucking drop in the bucket compared to some of the bands that, you know, you've talked to. But it was like, that was a thing for us. It was like, oh fuck. Like, if we could, you know, do a whole record of songs like this, like, maybe we could play more shows and it would be sick. And so with Idle Ages, there was like, I think, at least a hope and a sense that we had been so fortunate that all those pieces had come together, you know, and working with a guy like Steve, who, again, I think is so fucking underrated. I love how the record sounds. You're like, I don't know, maybe we could tour fucking 300 days a year, which like now as an old man sounds like a fucking nightmare, but yeah. You know, could we do what the Menzingers were doing? Cause they were, again, like only like maybe a year kind of ahead of us at that point. Right.
And who came up or threw out the album title?
Aaron did. Yeah, I wish I could remember the specifics of the context, but I remember like being in the van, you know, cause we had that really old, like, you've been in it, right? The yeah. Super old 1985.
I pissed
GMC.
On it.
Yeah, you did. You pissed on it like a lot. Or you pissed on it when Hot Water Music borrowed it. Great photo of Kyle pissing on the van. You can make that like, you know, like a Patreon only, you know, reward or whatever. You know, that van, you know, which was just a big couch, that Hot Water Music called it the flying couch, which we joked about recently. Like, you know, we would drive out to Steve's studio, which was in Woodbridge, Ontario, and then have to drop everyone off and then go. So like, by the time you got home from recording, it was just like so fucking late. But like, again, that sort of like bonding experience of like just constantly being together and constantly being in that van and the process of making that record. Yeah, it was Aaron who suggested the name.
That's also what I love about the record, because it's definitely a pop punk record, and you've talked specifically about making sure you had songs that, you know, just banged, were upbeat, whatever. But it can be dark and depressing at times lyrically, a bunch of it. But also from knowing you guys and seeing you guys play, it's like you can have the content of the songs, you can enjoy the songs, but you can also feel. You could feel great about it. Like when you talk about playing 17 or whatever, I can picture, or basements, I can picture those shows where people go off, because you guys have like a, you've been friends forever. Like it's just pretty clear that you've been, which, you know, we've all seen the band where they get up on stage and they clearly can't stand each other anymore. Mm-hmm. And everybody despises each other and it leaks into the shows. But it's a fun record, but it's also super dark at times, and because that's just that weird age where it's like you're talking about, you know, drinking, party and having fun all the time. But I think the record captures also the other side of that, where you're like, oh shit, am I too old to be doing this, or should I be doing something else, or is this band thing worth it? But we see kind of that, and then you pretty much immediately take it out. So when you have the record finished, you send it off to Paper and Plastic. How quickly do you guys begin essentially a touring cycle for it?
So we must have wrapped that record up, I guess, like in the winter. That's when we were trying to figure out dates, because it came out in June, I think, of 2011. And our release party was, we played Warped Tour for the first time, which was like sick. But we played at like, you know, gates opened at noon and we played at like 11:45 in the morning kind of thing. But it was still super sick. And then we went and we actually had like our release party at the Bovine, and it was awesome. But, you know, we started working with Adam Creve too, like may have kind of come up, but, you know, booking agent extraordinaire from Southern Ontario. And so he was like helping us. It was one of those things where we weren't like officially signed to like his booking agency, but, you know, he was doing the flats were taking us out a lot. And so it was kind of like, this thing is going to come out in the summer and we are going to play as much as we can. And it's funny because recently Aaron found, like, cause we're clearly at this age, we're like, oh, I was looking through and I would have found this. And he found this like document that I had put together for another booking agent at some point that was like our touring history. And it was like, we played like 150 shows, or we played like 100 shows in a year and like 150 shows in like a year and a half or something crazy. We're like, we were like very committed to kicking it, you know, like it was pretty much like, this thing is coming out and we're going to go and we're just going to see, you know.
Was there any of the songs on the record kind of post-recording after you heard it with All the Shine from Steve that surprised you, either maybe a song you thought was maybe meh that ended up being awesome, or one where like you had really high hopes for but it just didn't translate as well as you thought it would?
You know, when we started this record, I wanted it to just be like raw. You know, like if you listen to the first two Junior Battles releases, they're pretty much just like kind of two vocals, bass guitar, gang vocal. And then like a lot, I would love to do a lot of gang vocals all the time and harmonies of the gang vocals and stuff. But this one, like, because it was the full length, you know, I remember getting in a lot of conversations with Steve about like whether we were going to let him really go to town on like sort of building out effects and doing kind of the stuff that I ultimately think makes the record interesting. And my thing was like, I just want it to sound like how the band sounds live. I think that like we practice, we're so fucking tight. We practice a lot. Like that's, I just want a dry, sick live, like this band is sick. This is a sick live band record. And Steve's sort of counter argument was like, the live show is the live show and a record is designed to make you feel the way the live show sounds, because there's an energy there and there's like an experience that, you know, obviously there are fantastic records that are just totally dry, like a band in a room. But in general, like that's the live show, and that's what you're missing. And so we let him go fucking apeshit on stuff. And, you know, I listen to it now, and I still think that the stuff that he does sounds really good. In terms of where I think his contributions, like, really shine, where I was like, fuck, that turned out more interesting than I thought, was on a song like Nostalgica 23. You know, there's a bridge there that when we would play it in the room was like good, but I don't think anything like super special. And if you listen to what he's done with it, there's just like, I don't even, there's like, I think some extra percussion stuff happening there that Joel added. And there's just like this really interesting like echo on the guitars. And it all of a sudden becomes like this really much more like emotionally engaging part of the song than it was when it was just sort of us playing it. You know, I think we had a vision for the end of the record with Radio that was like sort of this like big bombastic, you know, we got a bunch of people to help us out with extra parts. Like Franz Nicolai did, you know, an organ part and a banjo part and a piano part that's in there. You know, Maddie from Upon the Music Industry has a horn part, I think, that's buried in there too. And we just sort of dumped all that. And then Aaron did like a bunch of layered guitar parts. And it was like, I don't know, can you just make sense of this? And then like initially it sounded like a fucking mess. And then again, Steve sort of found a way to separate it and give it this feeling that, like, again, when I hear it now, it doesn't feel goofy to me. And when I sort of think about all the stuff that we dumped into it, I can imagine it sounding goofy. But sort of, again, sort of Steve in his wisdom was able to finesse that song into something that still sounds like a band, as opposed to a bunch of guys emailing everyone they know asking for tracks. And so I feel like those really, really came together nicely. You know, the one thing that when I listen to it, where I'm like, I wish this was like less live sounding and more like we had got Steve to do something fucking weird on it, is You Never Get the Feeling You've Been Cheated, which is like one of my favorite songs on the record. But I just find like when it feels like it's supposed to hit, like when after the octave chord part, there's like just like chords of, and it's just, I want it to sound, I don't think I was even listening to the Bronx at that time, but like when I listen to the Bronx, like I'm like, that, I wish it sounded like a Bronx song. And instead it sounds like, it just sounds too small to me. And it sounds like I'm blaming anyone on that. I just wish that we had done something stupid, like added four fucking guitars just to make that sound like massive as shit, you know?
When, and you have Damien from Fucked Up do a vocal
on that
part,
song, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When, how did that come up? Why Damien? You wouldn't obviously not think the guy from Fucked Up should yell on this pop punk record.
Yeah. You know, Damien loves Junior Ballads. He loves pop punk. We really felt like in doing this record, like, not that we were like cashing in chips or whatever, but we had been touring a lot and we had been making a lot of friends. And like, this is so fucking corny, but like, truly, I think like you've hung out with us, you know, like you have played in Junior Battles. Like when Joel yeah. moved to Ireland for like a year or whatever, like we played several shows together. I mean, even outside of that, I think there was some other like Joel stuff. Like, how many times have you played in Junior Battles?
I think only about three shows.
Still a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Given that we're the same guys, like for the last, you know, yeah, like 11 yeah. years or whatever. So, we really felt like, you know, we had, you know, we were the dudes who, like, when we would stay over people's houses, like we just wanted to hang out and like listen to tunes, and we want to stay up till 3 a.m. and just like kind of annoy your housemates, but like, we just want to listen to Third Eye Blind with you and like have a nice time. And we were just having so much fucking fun. And it just kind of felt like it would be really cool to do a record that had all these different, cause like we know that we could do some things kind of well, and some things we can't do well, like sort of sing like a guy in a hardcore band. And so, you know, we just become friendly with Damien through like the way that everyone becomes friendly with Damien, cause he's a friendly guy and he's like everywhere. And I knew it was weird, but I was like, would you sing on this record? And he was like super down. So we just like drove him out to Steve's. We like showed him the lyrics. He did some like great, like there's a part in that song where he just does this big, like, and like, that was like, he just sort of was adding extra layers and stuff, but he basically just like came in killed it, listened to it, was stoked. Like, it was, it was easy, but it really felt like, you know, we wanted the record to kind of really capture that moment in our lives, right? Which was the experience of like getting to know all these people and playing with these different types of bands and becoming friends with different types of people. And so I think that's where the impetus to like get Damien on a song that like we already kind of like wanted to be heavier, and like Aaron and I just both like can't. Aaron can actually scream pretty fucking well, but like I definitely can't. And so having that like kind of come out, and we wanted it to like surprise people too, because it was like, oh, it's a fucking pop punk band, and we're like a harmony laden, like we're a pop punk band. And to have like, especially at that time, like I feel like almost now people would expect it, but like Fucked Up was still like super, I feel like, mysterious guy hardcore at that point. And so having him on the record felt like we were tipping our hand a little bit, just to let people know like where we were coming from. Because I think like you and I were talking a little bit before we recorded about some of the bands that we know that are good, or some of the bands that are bad that we know. And it felt like we were also cognizant of the fact that why am I trying to be diplomatic about this, right? I'm like, who am I going to fucking alienate here? It's just like, we didn't want people to think that we were like a lot of the bands that we knew that we were playing with.
Yeah.
You know, for not like that, just, we were coming from a pretty specific place, but we were also playing, you know, fuck, I'm getting tangled up in knots here. Vinny did a really good interview with Damien on his podcast where he described at some point, like, him putting out records for us, and how he had people who worked for him at the label that were like, I don't know why you're putting out this band, because they are like too kind of like dumb and poppy for like older people who want to listen to cooler music, but they are like too esoteric and like difficult for young people who just want to like have every song just be like 4/4 and kind of like, you know, yell along in the pit too. And so we ended up occupying, I think this is a very awkward middle space. And I feel like we used the idea of like having the sound of people like Damien on the record to like literally like position where you were in space as a band. Like, you know, Red City Radio wasn't going to get Damien from Fucked Up and Franz Nicolai on their album, because like that just wasn't the world that they came from musically. Whereas like that's where we were coming from musically, and we wanted to very clearly telegraph that to people.
Yeah. Do you remember the reception of the record? It comes out, it's out there in the world. You know, this is a time too when punk news is really big, stuff like that. Like, do you remember the reception?
Yeah, it felt like really fucking positive. You know, because this was, like you said, kind of the peak of like punk news's relevance in this community. And it felt like, for the most part, like punk news kind of got it, you know, like I feel like the initial review was pretty positive. You know, would they do like album of the month or whatever, it would like show up, you know. At the same time, I think that was also where like the, like for me personally, like maybe my ego and my expectations of the record, like literally do start to fall apart a little bit, because I was like, I think that we're going to get like actual press out of this. Like I could see us getting a positive review in like Exclaim or something, you know, because I think this is like an interesting record. Like again, in a way where I don't know that every paper and plastic band would necessarily get a look like that. And we just kind of didn't get anything. Like it basically felt like in Canada, we just didn't exist at all, which I think is like a very common thing for bands from our scene. Like, you know, I don't think the Flats had it any fucking easier. And so it felt like there was like a real initial like, okay, I think some of the people who we hoped would get this would kind of get this, but not all of them. And then definitely it just sort of felt like, I mean, it's so funny, this is basically just me unveiling my tremendously fragile ego to you, you know, that it never, because again, if I think like what honestly, like Vinny nailed in the conversation with Damien was that if you were like, oh, I like the New Pornographers, you know, are you going to listen to Junior Battle? It's like, well, no, because it's a pop punk album and it still has like a dunka 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 dunka, it still has that beat in it or whatever. And so we were sort of, I feel like it very quickly kind of felt like we were stuck in this kind of middle ground, And it felt like that, I think, from a kind of reception standpoint, too.
Yeah, I think that's why you talked about playing the fest. When you do play the fest, it's like not only is it all of your fans are in one place for one weekend, but just like getting out of Canada is so difficult. Like you kind of have to roll the dice. Like if you're in a bigger band that starts blowing up, you at some point need to make a decision. Okay, are we going to be the big band in Canada? Or can we do another 5 years of being the small band in the States and basically step backwards? And so many bands just cash in on the, you know what, I can play the University Frosh Week, College Frosh Week tours here in Canada. You know, we'll do whatever Dumb Festival 102.1 The Edge wants to put together or something like that. And we will just cash checks doing this. But if you try and break into the States, like you hear so many stories of like big band A touring the States and turning back halfway through because the you know, the shows are disastrous.
Oh, totally. And I just like I felt like, you know, and I got to be totally honest here now that I'm recalling it, like we did end up on the like literally the Exclaim like punk album, you know, year end list, which was really cool. But like we couldn't get, you know, anything in like Now magazine. Like we couldn't get, you know, there was like things where you were like, oh, I just like wish, and you knew that, you know, they'd write about some other band where you're like, no one listens, like no one fucking knows who this band is. And you're like, we can go to Chicago and play for like 100 people, which I know is not a lot, but I don't know a lot of these fucking bands, like, you know, in Toronto right now that could just go to Chicago and just play their own show to 100 people. Yeah. But you know, there's the disconnect there is pretty substantial. I'm curious, cause like my memory of this is like, yeah, it was sick, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be. You were like, you know, you were doing Wayfarer stuff at this time. You have four copies of this record. I don't know if you remember when this record came out, but like, what was your perception of this record? Was it that like, was this record just like, like, did this seem like it got a fair shake to you? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Like, do you look at this and you're like, shut the fuck up, man? Like, you know, or are you like, no, I get it. You know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I think at the time, what's funny is because of that scene of bands and like, I think I met you guys more near the tail end. Like I knew of the Attention guys and stuff like that. And not to be a dink, but I was probably 17, 18. So I was like, who are these old guys?
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
like
totally.
At the time you're like, there's only like 4 or 6 years in between us here.
Yeah, because I'm 85. What year are you born?
90.
Okay, yeah. So that's old enough that we were ancient. Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm 17, meeting you guys and stuff, yeah, I was like, fuck, these guys are still playing in a band, eh? But then
you're
as
Joel's age though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But then I think the record took me probably a month or two to like really, it was one of those like, yeah, Junior Battles put out a record, I'll get around to it type deal. Because I had that feeling of like, okay, it's the pop punk band, the pop punk record. I know what to Paper and Plastic. I know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then it was like, so 2011, this comes out. So I'm 21 on bands and stuff, on labels and stuff like that. And I'm kind of about to make these decisions that you guys are already kind of talking about on the record. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, am I going to be a piece of shit for the next 8 to 10 years to try and do this? Or do I have to make a decision and go another direction? Which is how I kind of connected with the record. And then it's basically what you were talking about, where it's like, as I dove deeper into it and knowing you guys, I was like, okay, these are some of the most fun, cool guys I know. But also there's this dark music, but that's also super fun, but it also fits in the pop punk world. And it's just like, so it's this weird mishmash. And I think we get these records time to time where like, I think it's, I always love bands like the Lawrence Arms, who are just like, too punk for most of the indie tours they got put on and not punk enough for any of the punk tours they got put on.
Yeah.
Where they live in this middle ground, and that's where I connect with so many of these bands, where I think that's exactly where this lives, where it's like, I'm sure someone could put it on a playlist with like Man Overboard or something. But I've never connected with a Man Overboard song in my life.
Yeah, that's it. I feel like that's it. That's exactly how I feel, right?
But this is like, yeah, this is It's got something extra without getting into, I also despise that new, like, anti-art, I'm just a piece of garbage type pop punk slash rock type thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I think you're missing the point of those bands that did it before, those like slacker bands. It's like, you know, there was another level to be on just like, let's pizza skateboard and do whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
So it sits, and why I'm nostalgic for it, it sits in that area where I was making a lot of the decisions you were talking about making on the album, and it gave me an appreciation from that world where I also felt with the musical projects I was doing that we were stuck in like a middle, like one signs to like a big label that doesn't work out at all in Canada. And then we can't get any traction, but it's still the most fun, fulfilling thing at the time to do. Music's just like a weird world, and I think this is a record that sums that up pretty perfectly. When this is not like, we're not ever going to be big radio bands, but we can still fuck up our lives pretty badly trying to pursue it.
Yeah, you can still make mistakes. But because I was trying to remember more specifics, but like I remember being really fucking jealous of Mockingbird. So like the band that you're referencing that you played in,
yeah,
that signed to Dine Alone, which is like, I don't know, one of the like four record labels in this country that has things like direct board approval for Factor money.
Yeah.
And like you guys were opening up for Alexis on Fire on like campus tours. And I remember being like very actively envious of that. But there's also some irony in that where you're like talking about both your bands, where I'm like, I think like Wayfair is like a legitimately like fucking great band. And like Mockingbird was never totally my thing, right? But like Mockingbird was the band that got signed to the big label. And like, I'm sure you have complicated, or maybe you don't have complicated feelings about that, but maybe I'm putting that on you here. But
yeah, I had more complicated when I was younger, when I cared more about what people thought from the outside.
Right.
I was like, because I think most people, when they step back in our world, you know, who would talk shit about it or whatever, like, there was like a jealousy thing where it was like, okay, we got signed just because we put out a really great EP. We didn't tour. We weren't good at networking. We didn't like do anything else. We just wrote like the thing you think is going to happen when you're a band, where you're just like, I'm just going to keep putting out good music.
Yeah.
And it's going to connect and you're going to get it. And so there was a lot of way harder working bands that saw how quickly we went from point A to point B, who just because of that quickness, you know, were sour about it. But then,
have you heard that before?
Yeah, from a couple. But then,
on this podcast, to give you shit about Mockingbird.
Yeah, exactly. But then we had people in the band who, like, they're not going to suffer any fools about that shit. And people really didn't like that, because we would have confrontations in person around the like good set man type attitude.
Really?
Where it was just like, good set man, but you know, I've heard you say this, so why are you good setting me right now type deal. So it was
really,
we just had like an abrasive MO, which I now look back on, I was like, ah, you know what, I like it better.
Yeah,
that
that's
we
the
did
thing
that.
Is like, now I'm like, that rocks. Probably at the time it was like another reason that I again was just like fueled by jealousy.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but that's on me. That is, I feel like you guys handled that the right way.
I think that was also the perfect kind of summing up, and the contrast to Junior Battles, where it was like at certain points it was fine, and some points it was bad, the interpersonal relationships. But then when it was good, it was good. Like when we were in the studio doing stuff, like it was the best. I love doing that. But everything else, especially when you sign to a bigger label that where you have obligations, like dumb festivals they want you to play and stupid radio things and stuff like that, where it just becomes an unfun nightmare. Whereas I listened to this Junior Battles record and I was around it, so I knew the touring you did and stuff like that, whereas like every moment felt awesome.
Yeah, and you know, like we were really committed to that. You know, like I don't think like by the like there was a point, which is well after this record, where like everybody it's not fun forever. But very quickly at that point, like people started to get jobs, and it was like now, and there's a reason why we're still a band now, right? It's because we knew, and we're all still friends now, because we were able to like pause when we needed to pause. But you know, I think of this era and like I don't think we had a bad night. You know, yeah. It was like,
it never seemed like it. Yeah.
We're going to have fun wherever we are. We are going to drag people into that. Like, this is dumb. This is also self-aggrandizing, but like, we're talking about junior battles right now. So like, I guess this is all I can do is continue to talk about myself. Cause that's, I guess, sort of the point. You know, we stayed in, in Michigan. We stayed with, now canceled Ian from Cheap Girls' house or whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
But we kind of thought it was like a sort of whatever night, but like we had a great time, but like, you know, they seemed maybe kind of annoyed at us or something. Cause we were probably doing our junior battles thing. And then like afterwards we heard from someone who like a couple of weeks later had stayed there, and they were like, oh, do you guys know the Junior Battles guys? We're friends. And like, oh yeah, they're the best house guests we've ever had. And that became like our thing, that we'd be like, we're just the best house guests anyone's ever had, you know? And we're like, you know, because we were friendly, right? So it was like, we could be very like, we just want to like commandeer your stereo and listen to like 90s Canadian alt rock. But, you know, we also like, some of the best nights that we've ever had were at people's houses where like, you know, it becomes a party and they invite your friends over and we're just like hanging out with their friend. Like, we're not even hanging out with the bands anymore. We're like hanging out with like, you know, the like sister and like all of her friends, like from one of the roommates, you know, who's there. And you're just like, this is just a great, like, we're just having the dumbest, most fun possible night. Cause we're in, you know, Toledo, and we'll probably never be back in yeah. Toledo. And that was like at this time, that was just like 100% RMO.
Yeah, so, I remember from that time you guys perfecting the art of playing, of just crushing the poorly attended show. Like, we played many a poorly attended show together where it was like, with me, like, I have a fucking attitude problem when that stuff happens. Like, I can knock myself out of it mentally, like, real quick. But you guys, it didn't matter if there was, you know, you're opening a massive show or playing for the bands and seven other people, it was always great.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. Like, we were just, you know, we're trying to amuse each other, you know, like, that was a lot of it. And, you know, like, you're kind of just happy to be there, right? Like, as much as I feel like I made it sound like I was jealous, but I feel like I only was jealous of stuff, like, almost in retrospect, you know? But, yeah. Like, yeah, just happy to be there.
When you look back on it now, do you have one specific favorite memory from this time?
Fuck. Yeah, you know, I think the experience of record, like really putting this together with the guys, like I really think, like, and I'm trying to distill that down to like maybe one thing, but I think, you know, we demoed this up at, and I think I mentioned this earlier, at Aaron's, you know, parents' place up in Holstein, and we like brought all our gear up and put it in like his childhood jam space in the basement. And I have this sort of distinct memory. The first night we like ate a bunch of mushrooms, and Joel like there was a lot of sort of untoward, just like 20-year-old behavior kind of happened like the first night, which was like fantastic. And there's like a lot of like just like beautiful sort of stupid memories from that. And I remember like the second night we were just sort of sitting all on the floor in this like jam space, you know, in like Aaron's, again, like childhood home, in this like room covered in egg cartons that he had put up there when he was like in high school. And we were listening to the demos and like talking through things. And at that point I had just been demoing on my own the song With Honors, which is also like one of the kind of the slower songs on the record. And I had like written it on bass or something. So it was like a little like weird. And I remember being like, maybe this, like, and I felt like it was so sort of slow and like weirdly raw or whatever. I was like, maybe we could try this one, and like playing it for them. And it being like feeling like everybody loved, like we all loved it. And at that point we were like putting it felt like the record was just like coming together, and there were these few pieces, and I was able to sort of bring one of those finished pieces. And it was just like this weekend that to me kind of captures, I think, the essence of our friendship and the way that we like, you know, then we're able to sort of take all these pieces and kind of put them together. That's a generic answer, but I just think about like sitting in that room, listening to the demos, sort of realizing like, okay, we've got a full record. There's like one or two things that we've got to add here, but like, you know, I think this is what we've been trying to do collectively. And we were all coming from such disparate musical backgrounds. Like, only Aaron and I like pop punk. Like, you know, Justin's favorite band is The Killers. You know, Joel's, I mean, Joel has quite diverse and fascinating musical taste, but like at that, especially at that time, like he was still kind of just like, he was so young and coming from the church, like literally, like Joel's dad is like a minister, you know? So like he was kind of just like coming into his own as like a person. 'Cause we were literally kind of that young. And I remember like we were trying to get him to like play punk beats in the early Junior Battle stuff. And he just like ended up being like this. And he'd be like playing a soca beat. And you were like, no, man, it's not that fucking hard. And I just remember like that weekend listening to what we had and like hearing it together and like all this stuff that we had been working on and each of us sort of bringing a few final pieces and like really feeling like we had succeeded in that moment in like capturing what it was like we were hoping to do, which was this like really holistic like record by a band, you know, that this wasn't like, you know, me or Aaron like dictating some pop punk album. It was like this was four of us working really, really fucking hard for a year to like build these songs and just being like, okay, I think this is it. Like, this is what we want to say. This is what we want this to sound like. Like, I think of that weekend and like that moment of sitting around and listening to those demos for sure.
I love asking that question because I think most people would assume when you ask something like that, I think even I kind of assumed I would hear more of it, but they would think there would be like a show or like, you know, our album review or something like that. But most of the bands I've interviewed for this come back to almost that same thing. Like the Metzingers, same thing where it was like they had a house in Lake Ariel before doing On the Impossible Pass, where they basically just hashed out the demos, wrote the record, and like that time together is still their favorite memory of this era.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which I think, because you're going to write songs, times are going to pass. Like, I've written records that, you know, are a decade old now and I think are total dog shit. But I remember those. I remember the writing. I remember, you know, the time I spent with those people. And that's always the best. And it's like being creative with other people is like the value in these records where, you know, maybe even for this podcast, like you could interview bigger bands and I'm sure you get some different answers, but I think
not bigger than Junior Battles.
Yes, of course, but
let's be honest.
I think the thing I kind of really wanted to hash out with a lot of this is just like how great it is to just create with other people, which I think Junior Battles is the total summation of that.
That's so funny that that's what everyone says. Yeah. I mean, that's like, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think specifically that's what you're trying to do, you know, and there are great bands and great artists that it's like much more of a sort of expression of an individual sort of perspective. Right. But I think if your goal is to like make cool shit with your friends and hang out, that's probably going to be the moment, I guess. That's, I kind of love that that's like an accidentally universal experience.
Yeah. Yeah. 'Cause I think, you know, I'm sure there's tons of cool guy records where it's like, oh, I was locked up in my room writing this, whatever, you know, but
yeah.
This is it almost
cool
seems
guys, man.
Yeah, it almost seems a cross genre. That's like kind of the thing, that time spent together, especially if you're still a band now like you guys are now.
Yeah.
did recording this, releasing this, touring, did that change anything you did going forward as a band, like by the time you get to Rally?
No, I feel like the only like really the big change with Rally was literally just that Joel moved to Ireland. Yeah. So, and that is like, when I listen to Rally in terms of like what I think, like the great stuff on Rally comes from the same place, you know, it comes, the process for writing it was kind of identical, but we ended up with this kind of deadline where, because Joel's wife, you know, who was in school, had this like great opportunity in Ireland, and he was just like, had just gotten married. So like, you know, they were apart for a little while, which was, I think, you know, really hard. And then he was over in Ireland. And so we had a lot of the drum tracks, but there's even like stuff on this record where like we cut up and rearranged drum tracks because like the songs weren't written, but we just like needed to get drums recorded before he left.
Yeah.
And when I hear myself saying that, like that to me sounds like, I already know what kind of album is going to come out of that. Like if a big band's at the same thing where you're like, you know, we mostly kind of like cut and pasted the songs in the studio. You're like, oh, that's why that's not as good of a record. Like, you know, we, very quickly, like before we even got to Rally, it was kind of obvious that like we just had like hit a ceiling. Like it was just it was very obvious and we all knew it. And you know, Joel moved to Ireland. Like Justin got a day. Justin was the first one of us to get a day job, because I remember being like really sad about it, you know, like I'm not gonna pretend I don't remember it. Because it was like, okay, like we just, there was like an acceptance that it was like, oh, he's going to have like a certain number of days off. And it was like, you know, no one ever wanted to be in the way. Like, you know, with Joel, it was like, I'm going to be in Ireland, but like, you know, you guys play shows, like do whatever you want. Like, you know, and that's like a couple of shows that we ended up playing with you. You know, we weren't going to not be a band just because Joel was in Ireland. We've played a few shows without Justin because he couldn't get off of work. Like, but we were never going to like be a band without those people. And so I think, you know, there was a recognition at that point of like, okay, well, we've got a bunch of songs, but there's like, you know, Rally to me just feels really good. Like, I think it's really good. I think, I think it is, unfairly maligned, but I guess I have to say that, you know, at least as compared to Idle Ages. And, But I can also see where the thing that made Idle Ages like interesting, the thing that makes like, because I fucking listen to Junior Battles all the time. I think Junior Battles fucking rocks, and like I don't listen to Rally as much. And like when I listen to Idle Ages, like I'm hearing, you know, what we've kind of been talking about for the last hour. You know, when I listen to Rally, I think that there's like moments of that, but like you're only like in your 20s and able to survive off of like, you know, every meal being like rice and beans and, you know, making like negative money per, like I didn't pay taxes for like 10 years because we were all just made no fucking money. Yeah. And that's like fine. And then at some point it's not as fine. So I think like Rally to me is just like a tripwire of growing up. Like Rally is like passing the threshold of a lot of the things that are sung about in Idle Ages. And that's sort of on some level, like that's the result. Like that's what you get when you try to sort of exist maybe in two worlds a little bit.
Yeah. And now what endeavors do you have creatively outside the band now that you really work on?
Well, we wrote a Junior Battles record right before the pandemic.
Okay.
We had like there's a full, like, so in terms of just like, no, it wasn't the question, but like we had a full record. Then we had dates with Steve. We're recording in May of 2020. And so that has not happened, but there's like an entire record that I think is like I genuinely think is as good as Idle Age. It's like, I feel like it came out of a similar thing where like Aaron and I in particular, like we were just getting together, like maybe like almost every Friday, we just like go to a practice space and like hang out and watch basketball and, like demo songs. And so like still playing a lot of music and still like, I, you know, we're supposed to have Junior Battles practice in like a week or something. And I would love to, you know, play in Junior Battles till I die. But, I have a podcast. So I have a podcast called 155 that started off as a podcast about every Blink-182 song called Blink 155. And, we've finished that, which was fucking stupid. And now we're just talking about punk songs generally as we speak. I don't know when this episode is coming out, but you and I are talking in the middle of December, which for us is Decline-cember. So we're doing,
oh yes,
Every week is a different sort of chunk of the Decline, which has been fucking incredible. I haven't been, you know, I did YouTube for a long time, which I haven't been doing as much, but like Justin and I have a show called Extremely Online, which we've made a couple of seasons of for Bell TV One, which is like modern kind of cable access. So still doing like doing a lot of, you know, that kind of talking to cameras about, you know, people who live on the internet type shit, which is like all I've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, like I'm lucky because I have a fairly creative day job. So, you know, I get to be part of making like music documentaries in, you know, in the 9-to-5 world, which is super satisfying. And so like that is kind of another outlet. So, you know, I'm lucky because, you know, we've made it this far into a career, you know, and being able to pay my rent and stuff, but like doing creative work inside and outside of work.
That's awesome. And yeah, even when you're talking about you and Zorgel hitting up practice spaces. I was like, even just from Instagram and stuff like that, I was like, how do these motherfuckers make even practicing at those shitty jam halls look fun? Like, you guys would just rent those ridiculous rooms and post. I was like, for so many of us, it's like, it's such a slog to get out to band practice, and you could even make that look fun.
Dude, we filmed a music video in the Rehearsal Factory Rob Zombie room because we fucking loved the Rob Zombie room. The press photo for Rally is us in the Rob Zombie room. Like, we love the other rooms. Now there's this spot called Lynx, which is good because, as we discussed earlier before we recorded, Rehearsal Factory is becoming a church now. But, like, Lynx has, like, the premium. Lynx got rooms, man. Like, and they got projectors. So, like, again, I mean, there's sort of a mixture of people who are on and off the sauce in the band at this point. I am, of course, holding the torch high, still on the sauce. So you just like go into a room that costs you a couple of bucks, but we don't go out anymore, right? So you're like, all right, I'm going to hang out in this room, put on a bunch of LED lights. There's a massive projector. We're going to put on like just a playlist of like 90s Letterman performances. I'm going to drink like four beers. And in the last hour of the practice, we're going to like play so much music. it's the best, man. I fucking love band practice. I think band practice rocks. So yeah, we're still trying to make it fun, Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me, about this record. I think it's a fun record. I think this was a bunch of good insight on it. And I think, if people haven't heard it or just listened to the show, it's definitely worth the dive just to kind of get a better idea of what we're talking about here and seeing maybe a different perspective on the creative process, where it's not, going into the studio, your livelihood tied to this, but rather that early stage of just like, hey, let's just do this and try it and see what happens and actually try and have fun while we do that.
Yeah, man, this was the most I've ever talked. I feel like this is the most I've ever talked about this record. So, I'm out of shape talking specifically about Junior Battles, but this was really interesting, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks again.
Thank you.
I hope you're able to stick around to hear all of that. Love Sam, love Junior Battles, love the record Idle Ages, and just love the inspiring attitude he had towards making music and reflecting on a record that came at a very pivotal time in his life. You have to make these decisions. Are you going to go for it? Is normal life more for you? Can you tour? There's all these auxiliary factors that are so easy to simply drain you or put a sour taste in your mouth. It only takes one or two bad tours to really break someone down who's already on the edge. But Sam and Junior Battles have been inspiring as I get older to realize that this can just be fun. You can still make meaningful, exciting art with the people you love, and it doesn't have to be in an attempt to play bigger shows or to get on said label or to do all these other things. It can be fulfilling to you personally, and that to me is a huge inspiration. Again, check out Junior Battles everywhere online. Check out Sam at YouTube, the show This Exists, or if you're a podcast person, I assume so, you're listening to this, 155 the podcast. They just closed up a awesome month reflecting on the Fest and the Fest bands from a very critical but fair approach. They're currently doing The Decline by NOFX for all of December. As for this podcast, the best thing you can do to help me out, share it online on socials, tell a friend about it. If you use Apple Podcasts or anything like that that does ratings or reviews, that would be a huge help. And just subscribe. That's, all I can ask for. If you need to get a hold of me, Instagram That One Record Podcast, or hit me up at thatonerecordpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to take a little break now until the new year. I've got the Sidekicks, some other stuff lined up. We'll see what I can actually knock out over the Christmas break and who can come through. But thanks again. I'm Kyle Crichet. That was That One Record.